Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Sally Alcorti, and welcome to Public Advocate. If you will notice, we have a new banner that represents this program, and it is a lifesaver. It is a life preserver, and it was designed by artist Joe Jones, lifesaver for truth activists, like myself. So he designed this one. It says, say no to vaccines, and we will save many lives if we can share this message. So please share this program far and wide, and hopefully we will reach people and prevent vaccination, because another banner I have says, a quote from Albert Einstein, intellectuals solve problems, geniuses prevent them. Ban vaccines 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016 for that matter. He also recently has designed a beautiful banner that has gone all over America, and I will soon be creating a television show called Ain't No Stopping Us Now. And the banner reads, unite to save our children, call for a national moratorium on vaccination now. So that has become, you know, pictures are popping up all over the place. I have four calendars worth of pictures of people holding this banner, and new ones are coming in every day. There are pictures with it that I haven't even seen, you know, taken and not forwarded, but a friend of mine said she was at a cancer truth forum the other day, and the banner made its way all around, and everybody there was taking pictures with it. I would love to get a copy of them, but nonetheless, as I say, we have a lot. Many people have stood to unite to save our children in calling for a national moratorium on vaccination now. So, anyway, Joe is known for his artwork. He has artwork in museums, most recently the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. His website is airmail-greetings.com, and he's known for his World War II airplane depictions. They are just magnificent. I have bought, you know, just hauntingly beautiful, some of them. Anyway, I would recommend you check out his website as well as his Facebook page, which is Airmail Greetings from Artist Joe Jones, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. However, I have asked him, and others have asked him, to produce banners for action, for activism, and that's what he has done like gangbusters. I've just described three of them, but in fact, I believe he's designed about six banners for me, all of which are magnificent. They truly, and they convey the message more importantly. So let me pick up Joe Jones, artist and lifesaver, right now. Howdy, Joe.
Sally, Sally, my pally, pally. How you doing today, baby?
Oh, I don't know. I'm Jolly Wally. What's going on with you, Joe? I was just exalting your talents, which are, you know, tremendous, tremendously talented artist, and lifesaver for truth activists like me.
Oh, well, thank you, sweetie. Yeah. Well, I tell you, I so appreciate always the opportunity to be on your show, and just before we even kick off, I just got to give you a call. You are one of the most devoted, one of the most passionate, one of the most informed, one of the most human and caring people I've ever met in this lifetime. Out of 7.5 billion people on the planet, you are one in 7.5 billion. That's how incredible you are. And I know you don't get told that nearly enough, but that's what I'm here to do is just help people understand just how difficult this job is, what you've taken on. And again, it's no job. You don't make a dime doing any of this. The fact that you do.
I lose quite a few dimes doing it, don't I?
Yeah, exactly.
I have to tell you, I was exalting your banners, Joe, and you're going to get a kick out of why. I was saying the greatest thing about the banners, it's not that they're easy to read and they convey a message and they're artistically executed. No, it's because they cover my big fat paunch. Oh, that is the God's honest truth. I hold up a banner, I'm instantly thin. Try it, people. You'll love it. It doesn't cover the double chin, though. Doesn't cover the double chin, so we have to work on that.
Yeah, we'll work. That's so funny, Sally. Oh, my God, you could. But, you know, again, this is such wonderful work, and it's so important.
I want to tell people how you got started on, if you don't mind. I would like you to start by telling people how you got started, and I don't know the answer to this. I actually don't know the story, doing paintings of airplanes. How did all that begin?
Sure. It is a wonderful, crazy story. I very quickly start with a quote, which reflects both the artwork that I do, the historic aviation art, as well as the work that you and I do, and the graphic work that I produce, being actually some of the most important in my entire career. That's how important the work that the artwork that I produce for you is. That is saving lives. It is out there with the intent to educate and save human lives from untold suffering and all the way up to needless death. But there was, of course, one of our great presidents spoke just months before the Wright brothers' historic first launch at Kitty Hawk, in September 7th, 1903, in New York, right there in your own city. Theodore Roosevelt once said, "Far and away, the best prize that life offers is a chance to work hard at work worth doing." Let me repeat that. Far and away, the best prize that life offers is a chance to work hard at work worth doing. And no matter what we do, whatever our vocation, our station in life, whatever, you know, our purpose is here, doing work worth doing is the bottom line. And again, that's what I strive for in my personal life, my career, you know, even my music. You know, I really work to make it all worth it and make it mean something. As far as my aviation artwork, just to answer your question, I've, of course, always had an interest in aviation. My father was with the 20th Air Force. He flew photo recon, and the nose of, at that point, archaic, you know, B-25s, World War II aircraft flown in the Korean War in the early 50s. He went on to work with Martin Marietta, which was a vendor of NASA. So we grew up as kids in the middle of the space race. It was just a wonderful kind of time as a young boy to see aviation and aerospace from the vantage point I did. However, the thing was, as I get out, took to skateboarding. I was almost a professional skater for a time, and then immediately took a kind of a right turn into being a long-haired peace activist, you know, from when I was very, very young. You know, there was always kind of that spirit, even going back to third grade when I used to stick up for the black children at my virtually all-white elementary school. There was myself and a Greek girl by the name of Bella, and her and I were the only white kids that would stick up for the couple black kids that attended my elementary school. But, you know, again, I've always kind of had a sense of purpose and, you know, a certain type of activism. But the
aviation work. Well, let's track her down and interview her, too. Wouldn't that be fun? Let's track her down and see what she's doing today.
Actually, in fact, I did. I ran into Bella just a month ago, about 6 months ago, we're from, both of us are there from Denver, and it's just, it's so wonderful. It was just in Florida, you know. I got a big, big hug from this woman, and she's a bass player. She so kicks butt. She just has a thumping, just a rock star.
When you say bass, you mean upright bass, double bass, or bass guitar?
Electric bass guitar, yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's a thumping rocker, but anyhow, you know, it's just kind of, the life is kind of crazy how things, you know, kind of roll through and have a thread that, you know, a lot of times connect through the times. In the case of in aviation and how I kind of got into that, it was really this is love for aircraft and the history of aviation. And as I got into it, I realized very quickly that it was a very, very serious commitment in doing particularly historic work. And as my mentor, James Dietz, who I revere to be the finest aviation artist ever, the finest aviation illustrator, his mentor was Norman Rockwell. And James' mentor is my mentor. I've shared, many times with him. In fact, he's got, I think, 7 or 8 pieces in the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. And he was floored to find out when I got my first piece in the Smithsonian. He absolutely has inspired me. James taught me years ago, in doing this, it's either black or white. There's very little gray in between. It is either correct, historically correct, or it's not. It's either right or wrong. And at that point, you really have to step up to the plate and do your research and do it correctly, or you just don't do it. As a illustrator, being a storyteller, a visual storyteller, some of the most dynamic, some of the most remarkable tales ever told are kind of in the arc of the spirit and heritage of aviation, going even before the Wright brothers' 1903 flight at Kitty Hawk, long before that, going into the lighter than air blimps and balloons and that even, it's just remarkable. And to think that you and I and everyone that's listening to this program, we are only of one of about 3 generations, not any more than 3 generations in all of mankind, in all of the generations, the thousands and thousands leading up to where we stand today, there's only about 3 generations that's ever known what it's like to fly at altitude, what it's like to fly in an aircraft and look down at the earth from the heavens. Before that, Leonardo da Vinci or Galileo or any of these great minds, it never, ever had the ability to experience that firsthand. And of course, people, our modern day society, they just take it so for granted. They don't even, it doesn't faze them, It's like, okay, we're flying an airplane, we have to hassle through baggage and through, security. We get on the plane, we get off the plane, big deal. To me,
I have something remarkable to tell you. This is kind of a coincidence. You're saying
mm-hmm.
that your mentor's name was James Dietz. James Dietz. Well, but North Carolina, as you're saying, is first in flight. And don't you know, Dr. Carley, who lives in North Carolina, lives on Dietz Road.
I'll tell you, of course, North Carolina is a first-in-flight state.
Well, that's not a mistake, is what I'm saying. Isn't this a small world?
I bet you that I'd have to do my homework and research to see, but James Dietz is remarkable. I mean, he is a storyteller.
Hickory,
I mean, just,
North Carolina. Hickory, North Carolina, Dietz
World. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, James is... James Dietz is one of my mentors. Of course, one of my other mentors was the original conceptual illustrator for Star Wars. No kidding. Ralph McQuarrie, who was hired by George Lucas, as he just began the concept of Star Wars, Ralph McQuarrie came in as a conceptual illustrator, and he was the mastermind, the visionary behind the entire vision of Star Wars and the Star Wars universe. Ralph McQuarrie to this day has a dramatic influence on every single, virtually every single science fiction film that's been made since the mid-70s. Ralph McQuarrie was just absolutely brilliant, and he was my mentor. I've spent time with him. He has seen my artwork and was so gracious. Just extraordinary to be able to talk with and become friends with a man like, you know, of his caliber. Of course, we lost him. It's been now about 5 years ago. We lost Ralph McQuarrie, and of course, what most Star Wars fans never realized is that the reason the original trilogy of the Star Wars movies looked so realistic and so spot on was that, you know, all of those, you know, craft and all of that, a lot of the detail, a lot of, I mean, R2-D2, C-3PO, all of that was designed by Ralph McQuarrie, who was actually a aircraft illustrator for the Boeing company. He was an aircraft illustrator for a time. Ralph McQuarrie was. So as we, you know, look at the, you know, vehicles in Star Wars, just understand all of that was, you know, most all of that was designed by an aircraft artist who was in fact a war veteran himself. Ralph McQuarrie was a Korean War veteran. So, you know,
an Air Force flyer.
Ralph, no, he was not, but he was certainly a Korean War veteran, just an amazing guy. Of course, most people don't understand that the creator of Star Wars, or Star Trek, I should say, Gene Roddenberry was an over 50 mission B-17 pilot in the Pacific during World War II. Gene Roddenberry, the guy that invented, you know, Star Trek. And brought us that world. He knew the face of war. He lived it. He was there. And it's interesting to know that, you know, he brought his wisdom and his vision of this new society, this new kind of hope for us, you know, kind of from the ashes of and the loss of war. Interesting. But, yeah, he was a B-17 pilot.
Yes, it really is interesting.
So, yeah, that's, you know, again, for me, it's such wonderful work, and I get to meet and work with some of the most remarkable people. I mean, I've spent time with, of course, my friend Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon. I've spent time with Gene Cernan, the last man on the moon, guys like Bob Hoover, who is considered to be the premier, the top aerobatic air show pilot of all time. I mean, this guy is the pinnacle of aviation, and he's a friend of mine, Bob Hoover. It's just incredible the people I've met through the years through aviation. Of course, Harrison Ford, you know, we're talking about Star Wars. Well, you know, Indiana Jones or Han Solo was, yes, he is an incredible pilot himself. There's just so many people that I've kind of worked with and have met through the process of aviation work.
If I may, I'd like to introduce everyone to the fact that you are an Emmy Award-winning artist. And the program, the movie that you worked on, and a little bit, if you would, about the pilot.
But boy, you know, I just, in fact, am thrilled to say just about a week ago we had the official announcement of the release of our most recent film that I worked with filmmaker and director and producer Nick Spark, who is just absolutely brilliant and an inspired man, just a extraordinary creative, and I'm just so honored to work with this man. I just completed my second film project with him, which is called Right Footed, and it was the first film project that I worked with him, which was called The Legend of Poncho Barnes and the Happy Bottom Riding Club, which was the story of one of the aviation's very early aviatrix, basically a female pilot by the name of Poncho Barnes that flew side-by-side with Amelia Earhart in 1929 at the Powder Puff Derby, the first female air races. The Powder Puff Derby, yep, that's what it was actually called because it was a women's air race, yep. But what's interesting is there was a real man, Halliburton, and he hated these women flyers. He tried to get the air show shut down. Halliburton did in real life. Really interesting story how that tied through. But we went on. We did such a great job. And again, I just so praise Nick Spark and the job that they did on that first film. We went on to win our first Emmy Award for that film project. On the heels of that, the second film, I think, has won no less than a dozen national and international film awards already. And we're hoping to possibly be up for our second, and I can't say the E word because I don't want to get jinxes here, but the second film, which is again called Right Footed, it is a story of a extraordinary woman. It's about another female pilot, but her name is Jessica Cox, and this is a real, just one of the most inspired stories I've ever heard of. Jessica Cox is now a world's record for being the very first human in all of the generations leading up to, the three generations that's ever known what it's like to fly. She is the very first human being to ever earn her private pilot's license, having been born with the birth defect of being born with no arms. She has no arms. And she, as a very young girl, was very determined to be really just get out there and shine, and she has throughout her entire life. By the time she was 14, she had already won her first black belt in karate. She is now just, I don't know how many belts she has earned in different styles of martial arts, but she went on to take on a project that she thought she could somehow do, which she was introduced to aviation and was taken flying in a small aircraft, and the pilot said, obviously most pilots will say, hey, Jimmy, or, hey, Sue, you want to take the stick and kind of see what it's like to fly a plane, and they will. Well, of course, Jessica has no arms, so, she's like, okay. It's like, and the pilot's like, it's okay. Take your shoes off and go ahead and take the stick and feel the aircraft. And she did. She put her feet on the stick of this aircraft, and she was yanking and banking, going up and down, and she just fell in love with aviation. And she was determined to earn her private pilot's, and she ultimately worked with a very, very just a extraordinary instructor, and helped her work with an aircraft that she could actually fly with her feet, which is called an aerocoupe. It was a single-engine aircraft that was designed in the 50s as one of the easiest aircrafts that you could ever fly. You can't stall it. You just can't stall it. And the thing about it, there's no foot pedals, so you do everything with your hands. And it's such a beautiful aircraft. It's got, kind of a twin tail, beautiful, plane. But she has now flown, all over the world. She's such an inspiration to people that are interested in aviation. Of course, is a female. She is, in my eyes, one of the greatest role models I've ever seen as far as a female role model. It certainly isn't these bimbo, cardboard.
Same role model,
Exactly, exactly. In fact, her whole message is, don't tell me what you cannot do. Don't tell me what you can't do. She's got videos on YouTube that she demonstrates how to move a big, big television by herself with no arms. She teaches,
well,
you know.
Well, you have to post that in the comments area underneath. You really do. I mean, we've got to do this.
Oh, she is just wonderful.
She's still alive. She's still alive and kicking, as it were. She's still alive and kicking. But,
oh, absolutely.
I would like to bring you next to talking about the truth activists that you are creating artwork, and certainly Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You created a truly magnificent portrait of himself and others, with the backdrop of 9/11 and the tragedy there. It was a really beautiful piece and also an excellent portrait of Richard as well.
Yeah. Yep, that was a tough piece, I got to tell you. Of course, I've been working with Richard Gage and Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth for many, many years as an official artist of one of their creative team, which is a great, great group of artisans and creatives. But I was worked to be the official artist for the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and it's been now 5 years ago. Holy cow! I spent just about a year working on that piece with Richard, and I got to tell you, it was one of the hardest pieces I've ever done. We combed through every detail. It just, you know, was heart-wrenching. Every day I worked on that. You know, it was like just reliving it. And of course, as a critical thinking and informed activist, understanding, you know, the much larger scope of 9/11 and how truly tragic and what a horrible crime this truly was, that this was, in fact, a staged event. It was a hit. It was a hit on the American Constitution. It was a hit on worldwide, you know, freedom and democracy, you know, the damage that our government has done in the name of 9/11 since is horrific. I mean, the blood that is on the hands of our government and not the American people, because if the American people actually knew what actually happened and what has been done in our name and on our dime since, there'd be public lynchings for George Bush.
Well, I have to say,
on and on.
The movie Why We Fight really brings home
exactly.
But this one particular man, whose son was killed in the trade towers, and had his son's name on one of the bombs they dropped in Iraq.
That's right. I remember that.
And he was so mortified to find out that the whole thing was a lie and that he had now caused the, you know, in his son's name, killed civilians the way his son had been killed. It was extremely important. That is a very important issue.
Yep.
Why?
You're absolutely right.
Why we? Many good films, including Blueprint for Truth by Architects and Engineers, etc., and which really goes into the psychology of denialism, which is extremely important and pertains to a multitude of truth issues, where people have cognitive dissonance and they just can't wrap their heads around it, so they push it off to the side when it couldn't be more critical. Now, Now I know you do other kinds of artwork as well, and would you like to talk about that?
Well, you know, again, I'd have to start with the artwork that we do, which is so, so very critical. You know, years ago I was a art college instructor at two different colleges. I taught part-time for just about a decade, or actually over a decade, about 12 years. And I used to, particularly my very first day of a brand new class, I would, you know, kind of strike the fear of God in my students. I'd scare the hell out of them by giving them a real taste of, you know, a reality. And I'd explain a lot of very, very serious things to them. And very important things. I'd help them understand that they were one of only a fraction of human beings on the face of the earth that were really pretty much born with the understanding of what they were born to do right off the bat, which is to be creatives, which is to be artists. And it was their duty to do something with that. And I explained to them that the fact is the power and the ability that an artist has in their hands is extraordinary. By being able to communicate through vision, image, we could communicate, you know, in a way that very, you know, a very small fraction of human beings can through art. And I'd always explain to them that point where in anyone's career that if you shift what you're doing and your energy from just, you know, doing stuff that benefits yourself, work or whatever, to work much like what we do that is designed to benefit, you know, our community or the whole world. I mean, once you start getting into that realm where you are working in the best interest of others, that's where magic truly happens. That's where, you know, I believe that the universe kind of, you know, compels us to, you know, march on and do the right thing. And that's what, you know, again, I believe certainly in the case of being an anti-vaccination activist, that we are absolutely standing on the right side of history, knowing that the medical tyranny that vaccines, the whole industry, the whole lie is, and again, trying to not only expose that lie, but help prevent this, you know, prevent further damage. Again, to me, you know, I would explain to my students that they have in their hands the ability to change the world by themselves. They don't need a staff. They don't need anyone else. They could create a piece of artwork that really does bring to light a certain concept, an idea, a galvanizing a notion, or again, a message. In the case of this, you know, as I explained to them, could you imagine doing the artwork for a campaign that ultimately led to the cure for cancer? You know, an artist could pull that off, you know. Obviously, for you and
you're
I,
right.
We do
you're
know.
You're totally right. And if you think of Obama's poster, honestly, he might have been elected because of that poster. It was
oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
Popular.
Yeah, exactly. Branding is everything, particularly in our society today. Branding, visual, you know, that's how things are assessed and people are judged up. So, you know, you could be really crummy at what you do, but if you look really good, then, you know, chances are, you know, in spite of your shortcomings, you're probably going to do okay. But for us, it's even more than that, because as activists, we've got to be absolutely spot on with absolute point perfect facts and be able to convey that information at a glance, at just a quick, you know, split second glance. There's a reason why the phrase, you know, 9/11 was an inside job does not work. It doesn't. Because when you're screaming that on a street corner through a bullhorn, people have no idea what you're even talking about. You know, 9/11 was an inside job. There's not enough information there to extract and come and basically, if you understand the trivium, which is you know, it basically formal education, where there's this understanding of a certain sequence in which information is delivered, and it has to be delivered in a certain order, much like architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth did on the film Blueprint for 9/11 Truth for the first time. And this is why they became so successful and so eye-opening for everybody, is for the very first time they used the process of science, or the scientific process of you know, hypothesis and proving that either correct or not, and they go through that. That is how the trivium kind of works, where by blurting out 9/11 was an inside job, you're just spouting out the conclusion or what you would perceive as a conclusion, as opposed to, you know, here's the issue over here. So again, if our listeners are not familiar with the trivium, I'd highly recommend, whether you're an educator or not, I was never taught this as a college instructor, this advanced understanding of education and how to actually convey a message, which all of that understanding came into all of the artwork that you and I worked together, because what we do has got to spell out a very quick, very meaningful message in a split-second glance. That's how activism has got to be. It's got to be very effective. You know, just it demands such a discipline of elements to work correctly. Much like the piece that you and I just pulled off was about a week ago or so now. Our latest piece together, which is this beautiful kind of life preserver, as we're throwing that out to the world as a life preserver, helping people understand the dangers of vaccines and all of that. But
In terms of sequence, and since we're talking about vaccines, I just want to back you up. When you were talking, I thought of this. This is from John Scudamore's site called Whale, WHALE.TO, Whale.2. And I have a feeling he probably put your artwork that says Say No to Vaccines, that life preserver, I bet he put it on his site because he liked it. You know, he liked it. But let me just say, the five stages of vaccine awareness. Okay, now I could skip them and go straight to the conclusion, which is vaccination is child abuse and a crime against humanity, which is a quote from Dr. Buchwald, MD. But instead, he has the five stages that lead up to that. One, vaccines are safe and effective. Two, vaccines are unsafe but effective. Three, vaccines do more harm than good. Four, vaccines are dangerous and ineffective. Five, vaccines are silent weapons for human farming, killing, sterilizing, mind control, and disease creation. For fear and income, vaccine advocates are psychopaths or useful idiots. Now we get to the conclusion. Vaccination is child abuse and crime against humanity. There you go.
Bam, bam. Yeah, this is such one of those clouded issues. You've got such, billions of dollars going into the propaganda machine that tries to still to this day convince us that they're necessary, that they are, you know, safe and effective. You know, I mean, to any, you know, coherent, you know, human being that can actually do their own research, they know at this point that it has now been proven by both the CDC and a big, you know, it's been proven by the CDC and certainly big pharma whistleblowers. Also, it's been proven, clinically proven and ruled in both, you know, Italian and French courts that yes, vaccines absolutely cause autism. That's no ifs, ands, or buts. That is an absolute fact. From there, you know, people just start, oh, well, wait a minute, you know, and they go on and on. But the fact is, what most people, and I'll just say this really quick before we run out of time, because for me, if you kind of think about what I'm getting ready to spell out in terms of dollars, because that's ultimately, as you know, what it's all about. It's all profit. It's all, you know, it's all poison for profit. And it really is not much more than that, certainly at this point. But what's sickening and it's so horrible to understand is that very few, even activists, go on to mention that among the other devastating side effects that vaccines bring us, there's a host of other side effects, including neurological conditions, autoimmune disease, acute reactions, systemic disease, organ dysfunction, and this goes on and on and on. And if you kind of break that even down, you know, just under neurological conditions, we've got things like coma. God, I can't even pronounce half this, you know, including stuff like Guillain-Barré syndrome, you know, multiple sclerosis, paralysis, you know, different types of seizures, epilepsy, convulsions. That little spectrum of of the damage that vaccines do alone. If you think of each of those areas, and there's a whole list just in neurological conditions that our industries among themselves, you know, it's just sickening. You know, we get into autoimmune disease, you know, ADD, ADHD, you know, learning disabilities, Alzheimer's, you know, autism, then we get into other things. You know, even you think about just over-the-counter medicines, you know, it's like, oh, geez, Sally, roll up your sleeve for a flu shot, and then the next day you're sick. It's like, you know, yeah, of course, it's all from the vaccination that you just took for the flu, but now you've got diarrhea, fever, you've got a headache, you know, you've got limb swelling, you've got local swelling, you've got nausea, pain, you know, redness, you're vomiting and all this. So now what do? The $10 or whatever it took you to go get a doggone flu vaccination, now you got to spend another $20 just to get, you know, Nyquil and, I mean, you know, aspirin and, you know, all of this. So you can't, well, serious stuff, you know, systemic stuff, cancerous tumors.
I want to tell everybody that Crystal Myers had a conversation with Jane Burgemeister, and she's a, Crystal is a scientist from Germany. Jane Burgemeister is a scientific journalist who debunked the bird flu scam and on the world. And however, but she was interviewing Crystal Meyer, who said that if you get a flu shot, it is far more likely that if you then have an AIDS test, it will show positive.
Oh, really? Oh.
And think of how much money they make on the AIDS drugs. So when they offer you free flu shots, know that they're going to come into a huge windfall if you ever have an AIDS test, right?
My God. Yeah, it's so insidious. You know, it's so insidious. So again, you know, as I just said, far and away, the best prize that life offers is a chance to work hard at work worth doing. This is work worth doing. This work that we do together is so absolutely critical, and it takes people of, an entire skill set of you know, doing your own research, you know, having a sense of conscience and morality, along with, you know, just a you have to be strong, you have to be one of courage. And I just tell you, Sally, my hat goes out to you and continues year after year after year. You've been one of my dearest best friends for, you know, going on a decade now, and I absolutely adore you for so many reasons, 100 reasons.
Well,
but thank you so much for...
You're calling me courageous, and I am in fact courageous, and there's a very fine line between bravery and stupidity. However, I want everyone to know that I was voted shyest in my class. But when they're murdering our children, you kind of throw that off. And now I speak loud. I used to have a soft voice. I used to be shy. I had a sense of humor. All those things are gone. I no longer have a sense of humor. And I am not shy, and I am not soft-voiced, because this has changed my life. I want grandchildren. I want them healthy. I want my children not to have been sterilized by the vaccines that I, in my ignorance, allowed them to be administered with. So everybody out there who's vaccinated their children, forgive yourselves and stop now. Stay away from pediatricians. Stay away from schools if you can't get an exemption. Stay away from hospitals always. Stay away from the military, where you are shot up almost as severely as infants. Almost. Nobody is attacked like the infants. So
I know it.
Thank you so much for your magnificent artwork, which has brought home my message so effectively. It is not just in photographs. It is on television. And we are about to make a television show of your latest poster with people holding it all across America with the soundtrack Ain't No Stopping Us Now. Unite to Save Our Children. Call for a national moratorium on vaccination now. I thank you, artist Joe Jones, for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Sally. Love you, baby.
Cheers. Bye.